15 states and one territory are holding presidential primaries today, including Colorado. Donald Trump will officially be on Colorado's ballot after a decision yesterday from the U.S. Supreme Court. It reversed a Colorado ruling that Trump should be disqualified from holding office because he participated in the Capitol insurrection on January 6th. The Supreme Court's decision was unanimous, but the justices were split on one important issue. Stephen Vladeck joins us now. He's a law professor at the University of Texas. Stephen, welcome back.
Thanks for having me.
So as I said, this ruling was technically unanimous, but there are these dueling opinions that show big disagreement between the conservative justices and the liberal justices who say the ruling went much further than it needed to. Can you explain that conflict?
Sure. So the narrowest ground on which all nine justices agreed is actually, Peter, the ground we were expecting coming out of the oral argument, that the Supreme Court held that states like Colorado cannot unilaterally disqualify candidates for the presidency, like former President Trump, under Section 3 of the 14th Amendment. There are the two conditions, that states can't do it and that it applies to presidential candidates. Where the majority opinion goes further, and where not just the three Democratic appointees, but also Justice Barrett would have stopped, is the majority opinion goes on to say states also cannot enforce Section 3 of the 14th Amendment against other candidates for federal office, congressmen, senators, but also that at the federal level, the only mechanism for enforcing Section 3 is for Congress to pass an implementing statute under Section 5 of the 14th Amendment, as opposed to other possible ways in which Congress could, and Peter, historically, Congress has, enforced Section 3.
Let's talk more about that issue, because there are other elements of the Constitution relating to presidential elections that do not require Congress to do anything. My understanding is these are called self-executing provisions. Can you read anything from the conservative justices' opinion that would explain why they went this far, or why they think Congress would have to do something here?
The best explanation we have is political expediency, that the majority justices were worried about other potential ways of trying to enforce Section 3. You know, one thing they might have been worried about is, were a future president to arguably take steps that would disqualify him from holding office, could someone bring a lawsuit against him while he's in office seeking his disqualification? Could Congress on January 6, 2025, when it meets to count electoral votes, could members object to electoral votes on behalf of former President Trump on the ground that they believe he violated Section 3 of the 14th Amendment? I mean, so I think part of what was going on here was an attempt by the majority to not just decide this case, Peter, but also to try to pretermit future cases. But that's a risky proposition in the abstract, and I think it's especially troubling, whereas here, you know, the court moved so quickly, heard this case on such an expedited basis, handed down a decision. One could, I think, reasonably worry, as Justice Barrett, as the three Democratic appointees did, that the court had not fully thought through the implications of going beyond the narrowest possible holding here.
Well, in fact, there are some criticisms of this ruling that say, essentially, the Supreme Court has nullified an important section of the Constitution. Do you agree?
I think nullified is a little strong. You know, at least formally, nothing would stop Congress from passing the kind of statute that the Supreme Court's majority opinion yesterday contemplates. And
but
Peter,
practically,
it be said,
that would never happen, right? I mean, practically speaking, in this environment, that would never happen.
So it wouldn't happen today. But, you know, imagine a world in which a Congress in the future passed a statute that would only apply to future elections and to future officers. But there's no doubt that the Supreme Court, at the very least, dramatically narrowed the applicability of Section 3 and the ability of anyone in our polity to enforce it. And I think that's a real problem when you have, I think, such compelling arguments that at least some of former President Trump's conduct really does seem to get pretty close to what Section 3 was designed to punish.
Well, and this isn't the only case. Just last week, the Supreme Court agreed to hear another Trump case, whether he has presidential immunity from prosecution for his role in trying to overturn the results of the last presidential election. And some critics of the court now say that the timing of that case means that the result of a trial won't be known until after the election. I mean, in general, what's your opinion on how the Supreme Court is handling these cases related to Trump?
Well, you know, I think with regard to the immunity case, the timing, I think, is a problem. But it's worth stressing that the court is still moving faster than usual and a lot faster than former President Trump had asked it to. I think the broader question, though, is, are we really at a place where we expect the Supreme Court to save us? I think it's understandable why folks who are worried about the specter of former President Trump winning re-election think that we should pull out all of the stops when it comes to trying to find some measure of accountability for his conduct leading up to and on January 6th, 2021. I just think it was probably always a little overly optimistic to put our faith in the Supreme Court as the institution that would be the bulwark, when at the end of the day, the real bulwarks are supposed to be the democratic process, the Senate that should have convicted former President Trump in his second impeachment trial, the voters who should not be choosing him to represent one of our two major political parties in a presidential election. I think it's a bit unrealistic to put all of this at the justices' feet.
Stephen Vladeck is a law professor at the University of Texas. Always great to speak with you. Thank you.
Thank you, Peter.